The following program is sponsored by Dan Witham, LPL Financial.
The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
The opinions represented during this show may not necessarily represent those of KRMG or Cox Media Group.
Your host is Dan Witham, a financial advisor with offices at 8516 East 101st Street, Suite C in Tulsa. His office phone number is 918-398-8387. Dan is a branch manager with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA SIPC. Now here's Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
And good Sunday morning, everyone. My name's Russell Mills. And you are listening to Money Talk in the studio with me. This rainy Sunday is in pretty much every darn Sunday. Mr. Dan Witham and Mr. Steve Money got questions for us today. Text us at 95920. And Dan Witham, how you doing? Giving away books again, aren't
That's
you?
Right. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't Yay. It, out there? I drove in the rain, huh, Steve?
Those roads are dangerous out there.
Yeah, I was starting to melt. It was so bad.
That's right.
Melting.
We haven't had much rain, you know, the last couple of days. But I mean, it's starting to rain a little bit. But my yard's been so dry, Russell. It's kind of ridiculous. And we need the rain.
No, we absolutely did. In fact, the drought monitor last week had us. There were parts of even Tulsa County that were moving into severe drought. So this will help.
Right. Absolutely. It's a good thing. Anyhow, you mentioned a book, so I will go over that. I guess briefly. We give away a book here every week on Money Talk, and the book this week is called The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, How Not to Be Your Own Worst Enemy. Steve, you ever had clients who were their own worst enemy?
Man, I've had me as my own worst enemy. What are you talking about? Clients are the least of my problems.
Anyhow, does your heart rate go up when the market goes down? Are your trading decisions dominated by emotion? And have you had multiple trades that have lost money? Are you repeating the same mistakes? I'm not referring to your personal life. I'm talking about your investment life here. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, once said the investor's chief problem and even his worst enemy is likely to be himself. And I would say that's absolutely true. And this book teaches you how to avoid those pitfalls and those mistakes. And the main thing, I think, for most people, Steve, is making them aware of what the mistakes are. Because many of us are just not cognizant of what we're doing. We're not aware of what we do and why it's a bad thing. Does that make sense?
Well, I do think sometimes we know, or we think we know more than we really know. And it's very difficult to listen to people who actually maybe know more than we do.
And the thing is, that's one of the things I tell people to keep a journal of their trades and stuff. Because a lot of times we don't realize the bad trades we make. We tend to forget them and push them to the back of our memory and don't recall them. But if we write them down and have to keep a log of them, it's a lot easier to see the pattern and what we might be doing. And so that's why I encourage you to get a copy of this book and look at it. And some of the chapters, you know, some of the titles from the book that I really like are In the Heat of the Moment, Don't Let Emotions Rule Your Decisions, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Market, The Folly of Foreseeing, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, and Don't Pay Attention to CNBC, basically is what they're trying to say there, which I agree completely with. This Time is Different, except it's not, of course. Anyhow, those are some of the chapters from the book, and I encourage you to call. We'll send you a free copy of this excellent book, The Little Book of Behavioral Investing. We'll also send you information on our momentum strategy, which is now up a little over 15% year-to-date, which is seven times what the market is up. Year-to-date.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
So it's doing very well.
The difference is?
Yeah, it's quite a bit. The market's up a little over 2% year-to-date. This is up 15% year-to-date, so it's got a good, pretty big jump in the first half of the year on the market, of course. We'll send you the information on it absolutely free along with the book. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. Excuse me. 918-398-8387. Just leave your name and your address when you get our voicemail, and we will send that out to you absolutely free, no cost and no obligation. And excuse me, Russell, my sinuses are getting the better of me, as you can tell.
You're excused, sir.
So anyhow,
we'll get you some water.
I try to not cough and not hack too much. We'll see how I do here. See if I can make it for an hour without losing my voice. And, you know, Steve, I was telling Russell before we came on back in the day, I did a two-hour show. I don't remember those days, but
we
used to do a two-hour live show, and that was hard when you had voice problems, you know, sinus trouble, whatever it might be. It was hard to get through 2 hours on the air. I don't know how these guys do it.
I did it on Sunday afternoons, a couple hours.
That's right. Anyhow, what did you think about the Supreme Court decision, Steve, the one I got you in trouble for on Facebook?
So let's tell people what that was.
Okay, yes.
Oh, you want me?
Go ahead, Steve. You're the legal expert here.
The Supreme Court ruled that you basically you cannot be forced to join unions.
Or to pay dues.
Or to pay the dues.
Yeah, if you're not a member.
And,
yes.
Clearly that's a very significant finding in America these days.
And it's and the union, of course, obviously is not going to be fond of this
decision.
They're
not real happy about it.
I'm sure the OEA is probably not happy about it. With Teamsters and AFL-CIO, all those guys are probably unhappy about it.
Well, and the thing is, I believe, it's. I think unions have their place. Workplace protection certainly have their place. I think the difficulty that grew over years was that unions were spending people's money for political purposes that the members disagreed with. Had nothing to do with really protecting the workers. It got into politics, and I think that had unions just stuck to what they were supposed to do and maintained the job that they had to do, you know, this probably wouldn't have happened. But politics, they're a terrible thing. I mean, stuff happens.
Well, and a perfect example of that is the OEA here in Oklahoma. They've been extremely active in politics, and I don't think anybody would dispute that, especially in the last year. You know, they've been down at the state capitol holding marches and all kinds of things and demanding this and demanding that. And many, many different unions engage in the same type of activity. They're not the only ones. I'm not saying they are. But it's pretty obvious that they've been engaged in political activity.
Well, and I feel obligated to do the usual disclaimer. You know, my whole family, up through my father and brother-in-law, grandfather, I mean, they were all union guys. So, I mean, I'm certainly not an anti-union person. And I know why they were members of that. So it's not a matter of being anti-union, but I have trouble an organization spending my dues in a way that I politically disagree with.
Well, and here's the thing is, it's one thing if you are a member of the union and paying dues, but if you're not a member of the union and still having to pony up dough, that just don't seem fair, doesn't seem equitable, and it seems like the Supreme Court decision is what agreed with what I'm thinking.
Well, you know, it's like a lot of things. Laws get changed when the status quo is abused. And
right.
They just pushed it, and they pushed it, and they pushed it. And someday, you know, people get tired of it. You know, I mean, this might not be a great analogy, but I would even say 788. You know, you take something that's supposed to be a tool, and you turn it into a weapon. At some point, people are going to say enough is enough. And I think the opponents of 788 got so ridiculous on their reefer madness kind of stuff
yes.
that they just lost credibility. They just looked stupid. I mean, it wasn't a matter of disagreeing. They just looked ignorant at the stuff that they said. And after a while, people go, man, if you're going to say stuff like that, you just have no credibility. Why should I buy into it?
If you're having to resort to lies, obvious lies
yep.
to try to win a political campaign, then yeah, you're going to lose.
Exactly.
Since when does truth enter into politics anyway?
Well, it should. And it does occasionally.
Occasionally, on rare occasion, I would say.
Only by accident.
Well, Steve, I'll give you my perspective on unions. And you were talking about your family background on unions and things. And I'll tell you my perspective on unions is pretty much probably the opposite. I would say about the exact opposite. My grandfather passed away during negotiations with UAW up in Ohio. He had a heart attack and died.
Oh, man.
While he was,
well,
negotiating?
Was
yes.
With the union?
Oh,
yes.
Lord.
My company owned my family owned a tire company at the time.
Wow.
And so we have a different perspective on unions. It's nothing against the union. That's kind of thing. That wasn't their
literally
fault.
Got
I'm not trying to say.
In your case, yeah.
I have to assume, you know, my sister, the finest teacher in all of Muskogee County, you know, since 71 or 72, you know, I mean, she feels pretty strongly about what she feels about.
Right.
Yeah, we just kind of disagree on some of that stuff.
Oh, and so. I understand. Yeah, and unions have served their purpose. They've done some people a lot of good. On occasion, back in the day, they did a lot of good. And I do think they have offer some protections for people like peace officers now, you know, like the FOP
right.
and things. They stand up for them. And the OEA probably, I assume, does the same thing. How much time we got, Russell? About a minute
about
or two?
2 minutes.
Okay.
Well, you know, the ironic thing is you got to keep in mind unions came into existence because of abuses.
Right. Absolutely.
And now they're having problems because of their own abuses.
Because we've swung the other way, kind of.
Yeah, that's right.
To the other extreme. And you're right. That's a very good point. I wanted to talk about emotional time travel, Steve.
Oh, dude.
Which,
let's go.
We're not talking about your personal life here, believe it or not. There's a thing called an empathy gap, and I'll probably have to get into it a little bit after the break, excuse me. But we are very, very bad at trying to predict the way we're going to respond to a certain event, as far as investing goes. We're not good at predicting our own behavior. Does that make sense?
That's right.
That's what I'm trying to assert here. And we think that we know how we're going to respond to a certain behavior. You know, these questionnaires that Wall Street does that say, what will you do if the market's down 5%, your portfolio's down 10%, will you sell, will you stay, will you hold, buy more? And all these people check, you know, I'll stay
right.
put. But they really don't. They're really not going to do that. And I can tell you from having done this for 27 years, they're going to cut and run. They're going to be gone. When you hit a 10% downdraft, they're going to be gone. even if not at 5%, but you hit 10, 15, 20%, 25%. We saw it in 2008. They're heading for the exits. They're going.
Well, I suspect the purpose of that questionnaire is not to really predict what you're going to do. It's just so they can cover themselves so that if you do something different than what you said you would do,
right,
they're off the hook.
And I think you're right to a degree. I think you're absolutely right to a degree.
Well, and people, you know, I agree. I think people often answer those kind of questions with what they think they should say instead of what they really
great point
feel or know.
Yep.
All right. If you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, which might ought to be called Why You Shouldn't Invest Behaviorally, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do be sure and leave your name and address because you are going to get a voicemail. It's Sunday. Once again, that number for the free book, 918-398-8387. No cost, no obligation to you. You're listening to Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740, KRMG.
Well, if you ask me where I come from,
oh, welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in about 8 minutes, your top stories, the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center, and your forecast from Fox 23. Find out when all this darn rain's going to move out. Stay tuned. Coming up next hour, Fox News Sunday. If you've got questions for us today, you can text us at 95920. Someone did that. We'll see if we can sort it out. We're having a little trouble decrypting that one, but we'll talk about it. Meanwhile, Mr. Witham, giving away books.
That's right. And before I forget, I want to say it. It's early. I know it's early to say it, but happy 4th of July to everybody. Coming up this week is our holiday.
It is indeed.
Our nation's birthday. And I want to say happy 4th of July to everyone out there. Hope you have fun. We're giving away The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, How Not to Be Your Own Worst Enemy is the book this week. Plus, we'll send you information on our new momentum strategy. It's up about 15% year to date. It's all free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address when you get a voicemail, and we will send that book and the information to you absolutely free. Russell, you want to try to decipher that
question? Well, sure, we can look at it. It says, to augment my retirement, would it be unacceptable risk at 54 years of age with little debt to put the money in an index 500 whole market fund or some kind of industrial fund for about 15 or 20 years? I guess what he's saying is that a good idea, is to sock away money in one of those index funds? That's what I get out of it.
Yeah, it depends on how much money you have. And I'm going to try to explain what I mean by that answer. Some of the strategies we use, like our momentum strategy, go into and out of the markets at different times. If you have $5,000 to invest, let's say, it would make sense to buy something like what this person is proposing, you know, putting the money into an index fund. There's pros and cons to buying an index fund. The pros are you don't have to worry about it too much. You don't have to worry about beating the market. You're just going to own the market, essentially. The downside is if we go into a 2008 market, you're probably going to get whacked upside the head pretty good if you're just sitting there and don't get out of it. But if you're going to hold it for 15 or 20 years, the question here is, is this person really going to hold it for 15 or 20 years? Mm-hmm. You know, because we have a lot of people who think they're buy and hold investors, and then we find out they're not when we get into a bad market. So if you had the temperament, and I can't answer that just from a text message, but if you have the temperament to hold it and not worry about it, then you'll probably be just fine. Yes, and that's okay. If you don't have the temperament to do it, then be careful, you know, be careful what you wish for, and I'd be very cautious about going down that road. But, you know, in general, buying an index fund is generally not a bad idea, you know, especially one as broad as the S&P 500 is generally a pretty good idea, I would say.
Is it fair to say that it shouldn't be your only investment?
Yes.
Like you should have some other stuff cooking.
Absolutely. I would say put some money into some small caps and maybe some bonds, you know, somewhere along the way. If you're just going to buy and hold forever, put them in different asset classes. I am not a fan of buy and hold forever, as I think you know from doing the show with me, Russell.
I have heard you say that.
And yes. I don't think that's the ultimate way to go. But I'm not sure if this person is advocating doing that or not. I can't tell from the text.
Yeah, and that is one reason, folks, if you'd like to call us, yeah, do have that option. So I'll give out that number real quick. It's 918-460-KRMG, 460-5764. And we can get into a little more detail with you on the phone, but that hopefully that answered your question. Thank you for texting. And again, if you have a question to text us, 95920 is the number.
Okay.
But you know, Dan, I think on this guy, you know, he's only 54, and it sounds like to me he's looking for some longer term. He's got some time left, of course. I mean, even statistically, he's got some time left. So I mean, if I'm just my personality, I mean, I'd probably be a little more aggressive than some people at 54. And maybe that's what he's looking at. It's like, do I need to be conservative now, or can I still roll the dice a little bit? And I think if the market's at 2%, I mean, man, that's barely above CD rates right now.
Yeah,
you know?
You're absolutely right. And the thing is, you know, it depends on the person's temperament and what their time frame is. You know, I don't know when this person wants to retire. They might want to retire at 70. They might want to retire at 64. So that could make a difference down the road. But if you're going to buy something and hold it for 15 years, the S&P is not a bad way to go. There's a lot worse things they could do than buying that. Certainly, what they might want to do is buy an actively managed mutual fund, which has a manager that runs it itself. But it just depends on what their temperament is and how long they're going to hold it. You know, if they can actually hold it for 15 years, then they'll probably be just fine with that, depending on what the market does. And we don't know what the market's going to do for 15 years, but generally, historically, it's been a good investment if you could do that, if you could hold it for the 15-year period. So, you know, it's, you know, and if they want to, they're welcome to call me at my office, or, you know, if they don't want to talk on the air, they're welcome to call me at my office and I can give them more advice if I can find out more about their situation, because I don't know what other investments this person has. They may have a whole portfolio of investments, or they may have zero invested. I don't know.
Well, and you know, you mentioned, well, you know, if we have another 2008, and this probably isn't maybe, you know, the best on my part, but I remember when we were doing those shows in 2007,
right?
And your people didn't take that hit. And so I think, in relationship to you, I wouldn't worry about a 2008, because you were giving great advice back then. Your folks didn't take a hit, and the people that weren't paying attention or believing the wrong people, those were the ones that took the hit. So I think in relationship to your advice, I honestly wouldn't worry about a 2008, because you stay on top of that stuff.
Right, and that's why I started the answer with, you know, it depends on what they're doing, because our momentum model that we were talking about earlier, we go out of the market when we think there are down markets and go to cash. And in our momentum model would have taken you out back in 2008 based on what the model shows. It would have gotten you out in late 07. So we try to avoid those down markets. Some people prefer to ride the mountain to sit in them. And some people can do it, Steve. But it's probably, based on my experience, less than 1% or 2% of the population that can actually ride out of 2008 without getting out and not panicking and not going to cash and staying out of the market for several years. I saw many people in 08 that got out at the very bottom because they didn't have a mechanism for when they were going to get out. Unlike, contrary to what we did, where we followed our system, basically, is what we were doing back then. So it pays to have a mechanism if you plan to get out in an 08. If you plan to ride it out and stay put, then you're fine. You know, if you can do that, if you have the temperament to do that. Sometimes that's pretty hard. In 08, that was really, really difficult to do for people.
I'm bad.
When they saw portfolios dropping 50, 54, 55%, it's pretty hard to hang on when you're at that point. It's pretty dark.
Right, you know? But at that point, what else is – you've got nothing left to lose. Mm-hmm. You might as well, you know, wait for it to come back up, right?
Well,
I
agree.
Because when you jump out,
once you reach that point,
you've basically locked in your losings.
Well, you're exactly right. And once you get to that point, it's too late to get out at 54% to the downside. Absolutely. You might as well stay in and wait for it to come back up. The problem is most people fear that that's not the bottom. You know, when they're down 54%,
right,
they think it's going to be good on 64, 74% in a month or two. And so they panic and they get out. And as we've talked about, it's an emotional decision. But at that point, the pain is too great. We fear a loss much greater than we experience pleasure from a gain in investing. And the loss, the fear of loss is actually twice as great as the pleasure that's derived from a gain in investing.
Wow.
So pain is what drives us in those kind of markets, and fear and uncertainty. You know, a lot of people were afraid the monetary system would collapse back in 08, and they thought the world was coming to an end. Financially, if you will. So that's just, you just can't let fear override your decisions. You got to decide ahead of time if you're going to do what this person says. If you're going to buy and hold, you got to decide ahead of time you're going to buy and hold forever, no matter what. So you can't go halfway.
Have a plan.
Yep.
Plan the work the
work
plan.
Your plan.
Right? So. All right. So we're going to take a quick time out. Our book is all about this topic of behavioral investing. It's called The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, and you can have it absolutely free. You don't have to invest a penny to get it. So call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do be sure to leave your name and address so they can send you the book. 918-398-8387. More Money Talk after the news on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize.
Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Mr. Witham picked out some patriotic music for us.
That's
today.
Right.
I wonder why.
Yeah, that holiday coming up.
We do have Independence Day coming up on Wednesday. big old Freedom Fest, Folds of Honor Freedom Fest, presented by Quick Trip, happening Wednesday. I'm proud to say KRMG providing the musical soundtrack again this year. So there's a shameless plug for you. Coming up in less than half an hour here, we've got Fox News Sunday all queued up for you. And don't forget, if you got questions, text us at 95920. Meanwhile, Mr. Witham giving away the books like candy, like every week.
That's
what,
right.
What do we got this week?
The little book of behavioral investing, How Not to Be Your Own Worst Enemy, which is really what this show's all about. Behavioral investing has been for years. We'll send you a free copy of it and information on our momentum strategy. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. Just leave your name and your address. I'm going to have to hit my button here in a second.
Yeah, and
I keep golfing.
For the record, Erica brought him some water.
Yes.
So we did not leave him high and dry.
Sorry.
All right. So we had a text earlier. We were kind of having trouble deciphering it. And Keith decided to go ahead and call and explain to us exactly what he was, what he's trying to get. Keith, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
All right, sir.
Autocorrect. Yeah. Autocorrect got me.
It is the scourge of the modern society, autocorrect. All right, so Keith, what is your question? Can you clarify a little bit for us?
Oh, okay, a little background. We moved out here from California about 10 years ago. Bank of America and that Countrywide stuff put us in a bad way. But we've leaps and bounds. We're back on our feet, have over a year's worth in the bank to cover expenses. We're taking care of for the majority of our retirement through pending inheritance stuff. My wife attended university, and she was on the loan program, so we were saving up the money for her tuition payments. Turns out there were some discretionary actions on the lenders, and it was adjudicated, and we are no longer responsible for her loan debt, which we've had sitting idle in the bank for the last 3 years.
So basically, you've got some money you want to invest.
Right.
Okay.
And I've been keeping my eye on the market. And everybody panics when there's a 200 or 300, 500-point drop in the market. Everybody's running to cash in. And to me, that's the time to buy in.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple questions, Keith, real quick. Are you and your are you and your wife both working now?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Are you contributing to retirement plans through your employers?
Yes, I am. I'm on the, I got the 2030 retirement plan going with, I forgot who.
Okay.
Vanguard.
Okay. Do you fund any IRAs in addition to that? Are you funding any IRAs?
No, we're not.
Okay. The first thing I would probably suggest is that you look at maybe funding a Roth IRA, which is a way to get money tax-free on the back end. It goes in post-tax on the front end. But it comes out tax-free on the back end?
Right. That'll be my wife starting. I think she's eligible on her benefits for her work. She just picked up a new job having gotten she's working on her CPA designation.
So a Roth is something that you do.
You can do it outside of work.
Outside of work.
Yeah.
But she's going, once her benefits are active in a month or so, she's going to have that going out of her income. Out of my income, I have a net. I have money going into savings at the rate of about $1,500 a month.
Okay, good.
Going into savings over and above expenses.
Okay.
So we still have this money sitting idle, now, doing nothing.
How old are you and your wife? How old are both of you?
I'm 54.
Okay.
And she's 48.
Okay, you can do $6,500 a year into a Roth. She can only do $5,500 until she reaches 50, then she can go up to $6,500 a year. But I would suggest plowing whatever money you have into something like that if you want it for retirement. Now, if you need it for a shorter term, don't put it in there because you've got to leave that money in there for 5 years before you can take it out.
We're going to be working on that aspect as well.
Okay.
But to find a long-term parking place for it, it's like $20 shy of $20,000.
Okay.
That we've been sitting on for the better part of 3 years, and we're getting along just fine without it. So essentially, it's money we can invest and not worry about and not touch.
Okay.
But for it to be sitting in an account earning less than 1% is stupid.
Let me ask you a question. Did you have any money in the market in 2008?
No.
Okay. So I don't know what you would have done. I'm trying to think of what he would have done in a 2008 scenario if he would have panicked and run or cut or stayed put. Do you think you have the fortitude Dan, be honest with me. Do you think you have the fortitude to stay put if you had invested today and a year from now it was 2008? What if your account dropped by 30 or 40%? What would you do?
I just have to wait the long term out because okay. for every recession, there's a recovery, right. And usually the recovery outpaces the recession. I mean, it's lost money in the short term, but in the long term, it's going to continue to grow.
Okay. Well, there's two options here that I can think of for you. One is to look at an S&P fund like you suggested, like Vanguard, you know, index fund, whatever it might be. And Vanguard's a great company when they have some very, very good, very low-cost funds. The second option is to look at the equity-linked CDs that we've talked about. I don't know if you've ever heard us talk about these on the show, but they're pegged to an index, and they're FDIC-insured if you hold them to maturity, only if you hold them to maturity. But they will give you less performance than a Vanguard index fund is going to give you. They will not reach the 11% a year average like the S&P has over many, many years. They have a lower rate of return. Of course, they have more security or more whatever you want to call it to them, less risk to them, I would say.
So the upside of those is you're never going to lose
as long
money.
As you hold them maturity.
As long as you hold all the way to the end, right. You're always going to get your principal back.
Right. And you may not get any interest. You may just break even, but at least you'll break even. You know that you will break even with them. You're correct. And what he might want to do, what I might suggest to you is you might look at a combination of the two. They're not all or nothing. You could always do both of these. But the drawbacks of the equity-linked CDs I want to point out to you, one is that they're not liquid at all. You can't sell them before maturity, so you have to be aware of that. Whereas the index fund is liquid, of course. You could sell it before maturity. But you can do both these things in a Roth IRA at just about any firm, as a matter of fact. You can do them in a traditional IRA, but I would suggest the Roth based on your ages. I would do the Roth, definitely. And I just think that you need to look at – I would look at several different funds, maybe index funds. If you're going to go the index fund route, I would look at a small cap index fund, a large cap index fund, and maybe a little bit of a bond fund, maybe 10 or 20% into a bond fund. If you're going to hold forever.
What's the difference between a small and a large cap index fund? They okay. cover little pieces of the entire market?
Well, no, that's a very good question. Let me explain what I mean by that. Large cap and a large cap index fund would be similar, is really what the S&P 500 fund is. It's the largest market capitalization companies in the United States. It's your Procter & Gamble's, your Citigroup's, your Morgan Stanley's, your Walmart, your Google's of the world, Apple, companies like that. Small cap funds are buying the companies, many of whom you may have never heard of, some you may have heard of that are growing fast, but they're still fairly small capitalization. What we refer to in my business as, you know, below $5 billion or so is what we refer to as small cap.
Large caps are not small business, below $5 billion.
Yeah, doing $2 billion a year, I know, in revenue. But
poor babies.
Large caps are doing 30 plus, and some of them are doing, you know, much, much way above that number. Yeah. You know, your ExxonMobil's, companies like that.
Right.
So what you want to have to do is I would recommend you have both those in your portfolio. They both have a place. If you're going to buy and hold forever, if you're going to just hold this for 15 years, that's what I would suggest. And, having a diversified portfolio, if you're going to buy and hold forever, I'm not a fan of buy and hold forever. I will tell you that up front. I don't do it that way. But if you're going to do that, certainly you want to be diversified in what you're holding.
Uh-oh.
And then just hang on to them and don't.
Well,
get rid of
them. At my age right now, I'm still young enough and working, and my earnings are up, that I'm willing to take the higher risk to build my retirement. Because when we went through the recession and the Enron and all that stuff that went on with the markets that people entering the working world don't remember.
A lot of
legislation has been put into place. A lot of protections have come into being.
And so I think some of them have already been canceled, honestly. So I'd be,
Yeah.
But I think I hear what you're saying, which is that,
it's a little safer.
It's a little safer to buy and hold, maybe. But to Dan's point, you might want to be flexible, too. And that's why having an advisor, having somebody who's keeping an eye on that might be.
Yeah, I would like to give you my information off air because we would like to sit down at a further point in time and discuss this with a professional.
I think that's wise. So we've got your phone number. If this is your phone number that you texted from.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
All right.
I can just give him a call at the show. That's fine.
I'm in construction. My wife is in accounting. And we're just two different worlds apart.
Right.
Hey Keith, we're gonna have to
wrap it up because we're gonna take a break here in a second. But thank you very much for calling, and Dan will give you a call back.
Well, cool. Thank you very much. I appreciate talking to you guys, right. And keep getting the word out there to educate people.
We thank absolutely you. Will. Thank you very much. All right. So I see we have another text question coming in. I don't want to tackle it just yet because we need to take a quick timeout. So we're going to do that. And meanwhile, I'm going to remind folks, if you'd like the free book today, The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. And do be sure and leave your name and address so Dan knows where to send that darn book. 918-398-8387 is the number. More Money Talk after the break here on News 102.3 KRMG. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG. My name is Russell Mills. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, your top stories, the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center, and your forecast from Fox 23. See that rain probably going to push out here this afternoon. It's supposed to be nice for the 4th, a little hot. Stay tuned next hour, Fox News Sunday. Remember, if you've got questions, you can text us at 95920. Someone did just that, and we'll get to that in a second. But meanwhile, I wanted to remind folks that Dan's giving away books.
That's right. We have a great book this week. It's The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, How Not to Be Your Own Worst Enemy. It's one of my favorite books. We've given away many copies over the years on this show. And we'll send a free copy to you along with our information on our momentum strategy. It's up 15% year-to-date, 7 times with the S&P's up, by the way, year-to-date, a little over 2% on the S&P. The information in the book are free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387, 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address when you get our voicemail, and we'll send that book and the information out to you for free.
All right. So our texter says they are 70 years old, and they'd like to know what – it says mutual bonds. We think they mean mutual funds because there's really no such thing as a mutual bond. Am I right?
Correct.
There are mutual funds.
They're
that
bond mutual
in funds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's.
So what that's probably meant. What they're okay. talking about. And then they asked specifically about something called the Allianz GI
Growth
Income,
and, Income
and
Fund.
Growth yeah. Fund. Yes.
Allianz. Yeah, I looked that up during the break to see what the returns were for it. It looks like a decent fund. It's made about 8% a year over the last 10 years. Growth and income funds are kind of moderate risk funds. They're not really growth funds. They're a little bit more conservative. You know, pulled back a little bit from there. So it's a moderate risk fund. The question would be here. And we don't know the answer to this, is how much of the portfolio is in this fund. Now,
right.
It might be a good place for part of their money, but not probably a good place for all of their money is what I would say normally. I like having some diversification. And as far as good bond funds to invest in, we use I use a couple different bond funds. In BWZ is one, which is an exchange-traded fund, and HYG is another one is one we use. There are a lot of good funds that PIMCO runs that are what are called closed-end bond funds, and they have very high yields. We've talked about them on the show before, but I remember we talked about like 10, 12, 11, 12% yields on some of the funds last fall, and those are in that range of 10, 11% yield, but they have some risk to them, so you have to be aware of that because those are high-yield bond funds, which means higher-risk bond funds also. But for somebody 70 years old, I would look for a more conservative fund. PIMCO has a good total return fund, I believe it's called, but PIMCO has a lot of very good bond funds. I would look up or give me a call or somebody like me a call and find out, you know, if you want some information, I'll be happy to research that for you. You also might look at the equity-linked CDs. I think for somebody that's 70, depending on what their cash flow need is, you have to remember you can't buy a five-year CD if you need that money within 5 years on the equity-linked side because they're not liquid. They're absolutely not liquid. But if this person has $100,000 invested to invest, it might be suitable to invest, you know, $5,000 into those or something like that. They don't need that for the next five-year period if they can afford to go that long. Of course, we have some equity-linked CDs that are much shorter. Actually, now they're coming in shorter and shorter, which is good because interest rates are going up. So we have some equity-linked CDs now, Russell, that are only 1.75 years. So very short.
Wow.
Compared to what they traditionally have been 3 to 5 years, you know, in the past, in the last couple of years. So the time frames are getting shorter on those CDs, which is better for the investor, in my opinion. And that's because interest rates have gone up, so they can offer them with shorter periods, shorter maturities, if you will. But no matter what, if you're buying into them, you have to remember they're not liquid. I just can't say that enough. They're absolutely not liquid.
Right.
You can't get rid of them.
Yeah, if you try, you're going to take a bath.
Well, and many times you can't. There's no market.
Can't even.
There's no market okay. for them. Yes, and that's why I always wow. tell people there may be a market, but just expect there will not be a market. Is why I tell people just expect that money's locked up for 3 or 4 years, whatever it is. Hold it to maturity. You're going to hold it to maturity whether you want to or not. I mean, that's the thing. Does that make sense, Steve, what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely.
And so I always try to go bend over backwards to explain equity-linked CDs to people because there are certain things about them that are very attractive, and there are certain things that are not attractive, you know, like the liquidity.
The maturity and the lack of liquidity is the big deal.
Right, and you just have to be willing to sit there. And the other thing is, and this is something I actually like about them, and I really haven't discussed it much, but something I really like about equity-linked CDs are they don't reflect the current price on your statement of the underlying asset. So if you buy an equity-linked CD, I'm trying to explain what you're looking at.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at what that means.
Okay, what that means is if you put $10,000 into an equity-linked CD, Russell, you brought me $10,000, and you said buy this equity-linked CD that's pegged to the S&P 500, let's just say, for the S&P 500, and in 5 years it's going to mature, in 5 years I'll get 100% of whatever the S&P 500 did, just for the sake of argument, is the way this thing's set up, hypothetically. Okay, so 2 days after you buy it, the S&P drops by 20%, let's just say. Your equity-linked CD on your statement is most likely not going to reflect that at all. It's still going to show you at $10,000 until maturity. It'll show the correct. It'll show a little bit of fluctuation before maturity, but it doesn't update very often. It'll show it at maturity, the correct amount. You'll get the correct amount.
So I'm less likely to panic.
Correct.
What
exactly what I'm saying.
I'm going to
get
my
exactly
statement. It's not going to be down 20%. Right. I'm not going to be calling you going, oh, my God, what have you done to me?
Right. And the reason for that is the security price only shows when the security is actually traded. So the equity-linked CDs, as we've mentioned many times, are not liquid. They can't be traded. So the time you're going to see a price change is when somebody trades it or sells one and somebody else buys one. So that's very, very infrequent with these that I've seen. And so they don't move very much on price on your statement. They tend to stay relatively stable on the statement. And I think that's good because that keeps investors from panicking, just like we were talking about. It keeps you from panicking. And you don't have a choice. The other thing is, if it's not liquid, I like that because for the right person, because that way they can't bail out of the investment, Steve, if it drops, you know, if the S&P drops or whatever, does something squirrely, which it's bound to do, they can't panic and dump the investment at a loss. They can't force themselves to do something bad, which a lot of people are very good at doing. Many investors are good at doing.
I think, excuse me, and I think also on CDs, those are typically very conservative, and I think people do those to be conservative, as a matter of fact. So, you know, that's the mind frame to have, but at the same time, well, that lack of liquidity, big deal. It's a big deal.
Right. And you have to plan for that liquidity. And so this is why I ladder CDs with people. When I buy them equity-linked CDs, we put a little bit in the 1.75 years, a little bit in the 2.5 years, a little bit in the 3 year, in the 4 year, in the 5 year. That way we have money coming due each year.
Every year.
Yep. We have money coming due each year to address that liquidity issue. And then we roll them over. And you have to budget. You have to plan for liquidity with these. That's probably the most important thing when you're buying these kind of instruments. You have to plan on the liquidity because things happen. And things happen that people don't expect, and they happen often.
Well, and in this case, somebody's 70 years old. I mean, I got to tell you, I worry a little bit about unexpected health bills at that point, too.
Well, and that's one thing. And one thing I do want to mention is the equity-linked CDs have what's called a death put, which means if the person passes away, the heirs can redeem the CD at par, which is the price they paid for it, basically the issue price, basically. So they're not guaranteed a gain, but they have an option to cash it out and get their money back, basically.
So at least you didn't lose money. And if I understand that right, they don't have to wait till maturity. When the person passes, they can do it then?
Yes, they can do it then. They can do it then if the person passes. If it has a put option or a death put option, excuse me, which most of them do nowadays.
All right.
I know it's a morbid discussion, but that's
reality. But it's realistic.
Reality.
People die. Yes. You know, and we don't plan that generally.
Most of us don't. You're correct.
So I said generally because there are those who do, obviously.
And some don't that should. So, you know, that's,
okay. You went there.
I don't want to ask you that story, too.
Yeah, we'll get that story off air. All right.
I think so. That's probably best.
So hopefully that answered your question. Thanks to those who texted us and to Keith for calling us today. That was pretty cool.
Like to call me or whoever that is, I don't know if that's a male or female, but if they'd like to call me on the 70-year-old and ask for good bond funds, by all means, give me a call at my office and I'll go over it with you.
And we give out that number a lot. So, and we'll give it out again here in about 1 minute or so, which is about how long we've got. So
that's right. And I never got into my emotional time traveling discussion.
Oh, we need to know.
I'll have to save that for next time.
Oh my gosh, I was so excited for that too.
But I do have one thing to say. The way we view the investment world is dominated by recent events. So think back to 2008. Everybody's outlook was very pessimistic. I had a client call me up, Steve, right after Trump got elected and told me to get her out of the market because she said the market's going to tank because Trump got elected. She took her money out and went and bought art.
Oh,
go figure.
We shouldn't laugh because she's probably not laughing right now because the market had last year had a fantastic year. This year's a little more mixed up.
Yeah, last year up 21% for the S&P.
Wow.
And 17.
And this year it's up 2%.
So up about 2.5% for the year, for the first 6 months of the year. Yes. So it's a little bit slower.
Yeah.
But that's what markets do. And that doesn't mean in the second half we won't go up 15%. I mean, that's quite possible too.
Absolutely. All right. Well, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Little Book of Behavioral Investing, or if you'd like to call Dan's office to get more information about what you should be doing with your money, the number is 918-398-8387. If you're calling today for the book, you got to make sure and leave your name and address so they can send you the book. 918-398-8387. Money Talks here live and local every Sunday from 10 to 11. I'm Russell Mills. Have yourself a great Sunday.
The flag still stands for freedom.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.